It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet busters and closet dwellers. It is time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. And I want you to, just for a moment, imagine you're one of those highly sought after photographers. You've been shooting for lots of different media outlets like the BBC, maybe BuzzFeed, National Geographic Traveler, USA Today, and I don't know, among all those others. And you're even one of Maria Shriver's architects for change. But behind it all, you're hiding in a closet. You're hiding in a closet of pain and loss and grief, yet no one knows the truth until you decide to come out of that closet. Well, today it's time to uncloset the truth and let the world see what you're hiding in your own world of maybe adversity or loss and despair. But I have one question. Why would you want to do that? What is it you're going to gain if you become completely transparent and forthcoming about what's going on for you? Well, I have a theory because I've been through it myself, and my guest today has been through it, that part of what you'll gain is your own sanity and your ability to help others begin to find their way out of some of the darkest moments of their lives and to help them see what they can do. Today's guest, her name is Megan Sneeden, and she is going to take us on a beautiful adventure of her life, her trials and her ability to transcend some of the despair that she's been through as we dive into her closet that has absolutely frickin' nothing to do with her sexual orientation because she's a heterosexual woman. But I love sharing these unorthodox coming out stories as we start to move into what we call the uncloseted realm. And her uncloseted realm is really about exploring the fear and the anxiety of living in a closet of closeted grief. Welcome to the Coming Out Lounge, my friend Megan. Hey there, Megan, how are you?
Hey, Rick, doing great. How are you?
I'm awesome, and I'm so excited about this. So I'm going to set the stage a little bit. We kind of became connected through some really cool peeps and different stuff, and we've both been WDSers. For those that don't know who that is or what that is, that's World Domination Summit. And when you get to become part of that tribe, you start to meet some of the most amazing people in the world. And one of the things that I've learned through all the connections that I've gained through World Domination Summit is those people are some of the most beautiful, transparent, honest, and adventuresome people. So that's kind of why I wanted to bring you on, because I think you kind of personify that sort of stuff. So give us a little bit of background. I mean, I know I said it in the intro, you've been a photographer, you do some PR stuff, but you've traveled the world. You've had a pretty interesting, exciting life so far.
That's definitely the way that I would describe it. And, you know, it's hard. I think I really fit into that WDS community because it's a place where you don't really have to be boxed in a person where you fit an exact mold. Like, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer. It's a community of people that kind of fit in different areas. Like, I, in general, consider myself a creative person and also a traveler. So the work that I do transcends just photography. So I feel like I can't just be like, I'm a photographer and keep it in a box, because I also do writing and I also do PR and I also, you know, work with people in relevance to grief and adversity and do speaking and stuff like that. So I think it's just been a matter of following the things that I really enjoy in life and then building something around that so that I can explore all of those things and explore the world at the same time.
Well, I love that you put this framework around exploring the things that really bring you joy, because one of the things that I think most my listeners struggle with is, if I come out of the closet to be myself, whatever that closet is, but we'll go to the sexual orientation piece for a moment here, is if I do that, am I going to experience enjoyment? Am I going to experience happiness? That's always the big question. But I believe, and you kind of personified it already in what you said, when we allow ourselves to be out of the closets of what others believe we're to be or how we're supposed to show up in the world, that's usually when we can experience the greatest amount of joy, is when we're actually being who we're meant to be.
Sure. But I would also add to that, that it doesn't necessarily mean that you're 100% liberated of other people's judgment or your own self-judgment. I think for me, what happened really was I just had a couple key motivators that pushed me to live the life that I am. Well, a few key motivators, really, but a couple of them being regrets and misery. And I say regret and misery because, like, when I was in college and I was really trying to figure out what I wanted to study, I suffered a lot because I wasn't one of those people that just knew. And also, even after I graduated, I wasn't one of those people that just knew. I've kind of had to follow the tougher route of just figuring it out as I went. And I really had to put all the voices of other people aside that are like, oh, I want to see you do this, or I think you would excel at that, to listen to myself and say, where are my pain points? What are the things that just make me feel like, ugh, this is not fun, I'm not enjoying it? And what do I feel is in my head and in my heart that's calling me that I go, man, if I really don't just follow that, I'm going to get to 40 and just wish that I had just done that when I was younger. And that's really what I answered to.
That's awesome. So it sounds like along the way, by allowing yourself to go experience that, even though it could be uncomfortable at times, you're still going to hear the voices of these other people. You're going to have come up against your own self-doubts and everything. You've gained some powerful insights how to just keep going. So what would some of those insights that you've learned be?
Oh, gosh, what didn't I learn?
Isn't that the truth? It's like people ask those kind of questions to me on these interviews. I'm like, well, where do you want me to freaking start? You know, it's like there's so many things. You know, for instance, me, one of the things that I learned about myself is the more I look deeper in those moments, the more I saw what I didn't want to be. But without seeing what I didn't want to be, I couldn't figure out what I did want to be. And that was like a big, that was a big pivot for me. It's like we so often focus on what we want and what we desire, but until we get what we don't want to be or what we don't want to have, we got to really, my opinion is we got to really figure that out first to make getting what we really want much easier to get to, because the don't want to be's and the don't have's are going to keep showing up and they always say, nope, that's not what I want. That's truly not how I want to show up. That's not how I want to be. And I know that was one of the lessons I learned, you know, as I went through the journey.
Yeah. And in terms of my own career not being full of grace, I had to work for a number of people and try out different hats before I kind of found my own groove.
Yeah.
I worked for a journalist who is very hard-nosed into politics, especially politics of South America. And I have found out by being around her, okay, I don't want to be a political analyst. I don't want to be a political journalist. What then next? When I was in New York, I worked under a fashion photographer who worked for one of the top magazines in fashion as his assistant. And I just was like, no, I want nothing to do with fashion or studio photography. All I like authentic relating and being out in nature and being around real people and different cultures and natural lighting, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of this stumbling process, because even if you discover, you know, I want to be in photography or I want to be a writer or I want to work in PR, you still have to find your niche within that type of industry as well, because there's a lot of directions you can go.
I love what you're saying here, Megan, because here's something that happens. And for those of you who've listened before, you're going to hear some similarities to things I've talked about in the past. But to find out what you don't want, you kind of have to go be exposed to this stuff. So for instance, when someone's coming out of the closet, one of the things that often happens is as soon as they come out of the closet, people will say, okay, well, here's how you do this coming out of the closet thing. Here's what I would recommend. This is how you should show up in the gay community or in the lesbian community or blah, blah, blah. And what I find so interesting is the more we're surrounded with those kind of people saying, here's how you do this, the more we start to figure out, wait, that's not how I want to be. But yet we get pulled into these places where people say, but if you're going to be this, if you're going to be a photographer, if you're going to be a fashion photographer, if you're going to do this, you're going to be in politics, being, you know, in the media, this is how you got to do it. And that's, to me, when we learn what we don't want, how we want to be. And too often people get sucked into this, okay, if I'm gay coming out, this is how I have to be gay. And before they realize it, they're back in a very similar closet. It just happens to be they've come out, but now they're in the closet of everybody else's expectations of how they should be in gay culture. So it sounds like there's some very similar parallels to what you experienced going through, you know, your different moves throughout your career.
Sure. And I 100% agree with what you're saying about this notion of the other voices. whether you're, you know, you're coming out or you're trying to find your life's purpose and your passion at work or trying to make it through something difficult that's unrelated to that, it's so hard when you hear from everyone else what to do and you just don't feel like it resonates with you. But really what you want is clarity and guidance. And it's hard to get centered on that when you have your other voices and you have your own voice and you have this desire within you to be loved and accepted both outside and in. And so when there's no roadmap that tells you, you know, here's a formula for your life. If right. this, then that.
Yeah.
The hardest part is really just figuring out how to navigate that on your own. And that was the biggest surprise for me in becoming an adult. Was thinking when I was a kid, okay, like I'm just going to graduate from college and then everything's going to be amazing, right? Right. Everything's going to be laid out. I'm going to be walking down streets of gold and like right. I'm just going to. And much to my surprise, it was like there wasn't this book that was like, here, Megan, here's how you do life. If right. this happens, do this. If this happens, do that. And I just felt like I got hit with one unexpected thing after another that I just had to navigate through. And that was really starting with the career and trying to figure out on top of that, you know, family relationships and love relationships, and then going through the loss of my father and then navigating that on top of everything else. Being an adult is hard. Can't we just be kids forever?
Right, right. Wouldn't that be nice? But you kind of touched on one of the biggest subjects that really brought us to even having this conversation today. There was some pretty significant losses in your family for you.
There were. Yeah. When I was 6 years old, my brother was run over by a car. And that just, it formed my childhood, essentially.
Yeah.
Because then it left me as an only child. And afterwards, you know, my parents tried to have kids again and my mom had a couple miscarriages. So that in itself was a loss to navigate. And these are, I was only 6 years old. You know, loss is, it's a very adult topic or upper level thinking topic. And to try to get a child to understand exactly what that is and what that means, it's very confronting and very confusing. And it's so interesting, the things of your life that become normal that aren't normal to other people. Like my childhood was growing up reading books like The Fall of Freddy the Leaf and these other books on loss. And, you know, when I say that this kind of painted my life or formed my perspective, there is a different way of looking at loss as something that benefits you, or they call it like post-traumatic growth.
Yep.
And when I look back on my life and the way that it's shaped me, I can really see how having a loss and being confronted with the brevity of life and how fast that can be taken away from you, I can see how that informed my choices in my early 20s of having this kind of die hard, must go see the world, must live like it's my last moment, must love hard kind of mentality and way of doing things. Because not that this was necessarily at the forefront of my mind yet, because I think that came later in my writings and self-discovery, but I really was living with this kind of brevity of life, you know, Seneca type mentality. And that even I think developed furthermore when I was 25 and when I was already working in travel and, you know, photography and journalism. And then I lost my dad to a plane crash. And that was really where even more self-discovery came to be, because then I now am going through loss with an adult mind and I'm trying to just understand all of it, for because that for me, that loss rocked my world, rocked my world, because there's a way that I was trying to justify that, to talk myself out of my own pain. And this was even based on some of the feedback I was getting from other people, where I'm asking myself and other people are asking me, like, why is this so hard for you? That
that had to be painful for somebody to ask that kind of question.
Oh, extremely painful, especially when it came from people that I cared about.
Right.
Because I'm trying to understand my own pain and they're trying to understand. And I'm like, I don't understand any of this. And so I was trying for a long time to rationalize it, you know, like people's parents are meant to die before the child and this is a normal course of life. Like, why is this so difficult? Why can't I just get past this. But I think when you go through a loss, there is no just.
Yeah.
There is no just. Why can't I just get past this? Why can't I just be a normal person? Why can't I just have lived the life that I thought was going to be unfolded for me? And so then it's like, what do you do with that?
Mm-hmm. Here's the parallel to what you're talking about to the coming out process. So many of us who have been in the closet and stood there and heard people say, well, can't you just not be attracted to them? Can't you just be, you know, normal? There is no just to this being normal and not being attracted to someone of the same sex. There is no just to this. And it's the same thing you're talking about. When somebody says, well, can't you just do this? It's like, you just want to slap them and go, well, can't you just understand? It's like, you know, until you've stood in that person's shoes and had that experience, which I believe none of us can actually feel, you know, we can't 100% understand somebody else's experience because we're not them. We can have similarities, but man, that word just, it pisses me off. There's just no getting around it. And then what I think, I know what happens for a lot of us who are in the closet is sometimes it can drive us deeper into that closet of, well, then I'm just not going to let this be seen and I'm not going to let this taboo, secretive thing about me show up. And it sounds like that's similar to what you began to feel, that this grief is something that you kind of had to hide.
Sure. Absolutely. And well, yes, I want to say yes and no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sure, I had my own struggle with it and my own discomfort with my pain. And I also had people, you know, show their discomfort with it. But I also had a lot of support too. Like my mom is probably one of the best people on the planet who really understood and gave me a space to just be who I was and talk about it. And so her and I have a really rock solid relationship of support where we could just be probably as open about our experience with loss as we could be, which is really relieving. And I also have some incredible friends too, so I don't want to discredit that.
Sure.
But one of the things that I had to really get in order to move through this was, you know, other people, they just want the best for you. They want you to feel good. They want you to be happy because they also want that for themselves. So when they're confronted with something that they can't solve and that really hits at their point of feeling powerless, it's like they don't know what else to say because they can't solve this for you. And I really do think, at least in American society, we come from this culture of the hero or of the winner or the successful person that conquers the mountain and takes on the world and they win. Like any, you know, any blockbuster movie is based on the hero who triumphs in the end. But what does somebody do with someone who is in pain, who doesn't have a heroic ending necessarily, where there's a loss and there's no solution because there's no bringing that person back?
Well,
and they only can answer from what they know and what they think they know that might help you.
Well, you brought forth a really powerful piece of the puzzle here that, you know, as much as many people who are in the closet confront, you know, some pushback about being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, oftentimes there's two things that I try to help clients with in this arena. And here again is the parallel. One, the person who's hearing this information, the first place they often will go is to the safe place. They want to help you be safe, even if they don't know how to do that. They're afraid because of what they've, you know, what society has put on them about, you know, being gay or lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And so the first reaction often comes from a place of, I just want to protect you. I want to make sure you're going to be okay. But then the other piece of it comes from, they don't know how to relate. So then some of those defenses come up and they're like, well, then let's just make this better for you. And they want to just make it good. They want to make it right in some way, which goes to what you just were talking about the hero mentality of, well, let me make this, let's fix you, let's make it better. Then, of course, we get to the extreme places where there is no fixing and they think they can fix you through conversion therapy and all this sort of stuff. So again, I find this so fascinating as you're talking about this grief and making things better. The parallels are so, so very similar. And I don't know.
It's really interesting for you to talk about it that way, because I never really I've never really thought about that for someone else who's going through the coming out process.
Well, but think about your own grief process. You're coming out to be someone who, who knows how many other people on the planet currently alive have experienced what you've experienced, loss of a brother and loss of a father. Yes, they were years apart, but those people are gone. Now, I can guarantee you, if you looked around in your circle of friends, you probably don't have a whole lot of friends that can say, yeah, I've lost my brother and my father, right?
Yeah, that's actually true. But, you know, one of the funny things is I actually have an aunt who has lost both her brother and father. And we've grown really close, yeah, over the years, because it was something she could understand. And just going back to communication and relationships, one of the biggest things I learned through that experience of navigating relationships and stuff through grief was communication skills, essentially, because I think what happens a lot with grief is you get a lot of support right after someone dies, because everyone's like, I want to be there. You know, that the funeral happens, you're almost like overwhelmed by the amount of people that are like delivering you flowers and cakes and all kinds of crazy things. And then all of a sudden that drops off.
Yep.
People disappear and people stop asking about it and they stop talking about it. And I don't blame anyone for that, right? Because what that really was for me was an invitation to understand how I can effectively communicate with people that I want to be supported by. Because the truth is, and what I've realized now as I've witnessed other people go through loss, is that you really don't know what that person needs. And you're kind of in your head going, do they want to talk about it? Do they not? Do I do something for them? Do I back off? Like, they don't know what you need. And so what I learned was in this, you know, being related to what you're saying about stepping into who you really are and owning what's happening in your life, really looking at that and saying, okay, I'm going to voice what's going on with me right now because this person probably doesn't know, and tell them what I need and what they can do, because people really do want to help. They just don't know how. So one example of that is I had gone back to live in New York City after maybe 8 months after my dad had passed, because he was in California when the accident happened, which is where my mom was. I was living in New York. I had to fly back and like run his construction business with my mom for several months. And then I went back to New York and tried to resume my life. And my time there was really short before he died. So my friends were new and they were like, we don't know what to do. And so I developed this process of trying to create more balance where, you know, the feelings of grief really just have to come out, because you can't hold all that pain in your body or else it literally just comes out. At times that you don't expect. I've had, you know, anxiety and panic attacks before. I've been in the grocery store and will just start crying when the song comes on. So I would do this practice where I would call one of my friends and I would say, okay, here's where you can help me. I am in a world of pain today. I am so sad. I'm going to take this next hour to just listen to really sad music, cry, journal, let it out, and just let myself have this time to just grieve and be in pain. But then after that hour, hour and a half is over, I want you to just come over, and I want you to come over with plans, and we're just going to do something. And so just pick something fun. I don't care what it is. I don't care if we go for a walk in the dog park, or if you're just going to take me out to brunch, or we just go for a walk, or whatever it is.
Right.
So that I could have this moment to grieve, but then also get up out of that pain. And this is your way that you can help me, and we can be fun together and talk. And this process that I developed, and I really found it effective, it really led to close relationships, you know, because then it empowered my friends or my family members to know what to do to support me. And it also made it fun for us both to be able to have these real connections and also feel like we shared something. Because then even outside of grief, if I had a friend or family member that was going through something hard, I was like, okay, why don't you take some time to be with you and be with your feelings? Then we can do something else.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know what's so beautiful about what you just described? And it's kind of ironic, because I did one of my little Instagram memes today that I was at Long Beach Antique Market over the weekend, and there was this box of like doll arms. So it was a really cool booth. They had like all sorts of toys and stuff, but this was like a box of doll arms that, you know, people could get replacement arms for their dolls and stuff from, you know, antiques and stuff. And I took a picture of it, and the meme says, if you don't ask for a helping hand, no one knows you need it. And I think that so beautifully demonstrates what you just talked about. Sometimes people don't know what to do. They don't know what you need. And I know in the coming out experience, so often it's so similar to what you just described about, you know, losing someone. And there is a grief and a loss that happens when coming out. You're literally losing and letting go of the person that you knew yourself to be. And for so many people that are hearing that you're gay or lesbian or whatever you may be coming out as, they're losing that person they knew you to be. So there is actually a grief process that happens in the coming out world as well. And then once you come out, you kind of have that hubbub of, okay, those that are happy for you are really happy for you. Those that aren't, they're kind of like, okay, I'm walking away. But then shortly after all of this, it's kind of like, okay, you're out. Good luck. Catch you later. And they don't realize how isolating that can suddenly become, the same way grief becomes very isolating. It's like, okay, the funeral's done and all this. People were there, but now you're kind of on your own. And the thing that needs to happen more often than not is you need some support along the way, but people don't know what that looks like at times. And I know for a lot of my clients, I've said the hardest thing you will probably ever do as you come through the closet doors is learn to ask for what you need in the moment. And to also tell people what you don't need. That's the other flip side of that. I love, again, how this parallel is showing up in what you've gone through. So you've talked a lot about this process you use. It sounds like that's how you've learned to get from the place of pain to kind of feeling good. Is this something that consistently you use even today if things show up?
Do I still use it today? You know, I would say, you know, it's been 5 years since my dad has passed, so I'm kind of beyond the immediate trauma. Mm-hmm. Where it's so cliche when people talk about time and how time is healing, and I used to hate when people would say that. I used to hate it so much, like, oh, you know, all you need is time. Because when you're sitting in your pain, you go, God, I need to sit with this longer. You're going, Right. That's not a solution. But it really is true, though. Yeah. That now that I've gone 5 years of healing and trying different things and just seeing what's going to help me, that I've gotten past the immediate trauma. And I can look back now and see how dealing with grief now, because it just becomes part of your life and part of your process. It's never just something that goes away. I can see how things are different for me now. Mm. And it was something that helped me then when I was just, there were so many feelings all the time, because I constructed this thing that I called the grief graph in my journals, because journaling has also been very healing for me, where I would journal what my grief looked like. And in the beginning, the grief graph was off the charts, where it was like, you're up, you're down, you're angry, you're sad, you want to punch someone in the face, and then you want to cry, and then you're feeling depressed, and then anxiety, and you're all over the place. And then that graph kind of evens out and becomes these undulating, slower waves where things are, you know, you'll have 1 month where you're like on top of the world and you're feeling amazing. And then you'll have 1 month where you're like in it, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 5 years goes by, and then you'll have 4 months or 6 months where you're totally fine. And the nostalgic holiday season or the anniversaries really trigger you. So you'll have a couple weeks, you know, it varies. So that practice for me really isn't something necessarily that I needed. Also, maybe too, that I've just changed so much as a person that I don't necessarily see it anymore as a practice, like something that I'm doing on purpose. Like maybe it's just become part of my life.
Well, it's become part of your second nature.
Yeah. But these kind of elements of that are now part of me, where, you know, I'm communicating and asking for help and practicing more openness with my friends and families about what's actually going on with me, or having moments of introspection where I journal or listen to music and just sit with my feelings. Maybe that's more the way that things have evolved as a practice, instead of asking someone to, you know, help pull me up out of my dark moments.
I love the graph concept. I'm going to steal that and use that with some of my clients. Like, let's graph this, you know, let's, you know, every day.
It is so. I should send you screenshots of some of these graphs because they're actually really comical.
That would be really, that would be really powerful. And so here we are, kind of like, you know, going to do some little bit of planning, strategic planning for when this show actually airs. I'd love to have a couple of those graphs to be on the show page to show people how they can kind of walk through this and see what happens. So let's do it. I'd love to see that.
Really endearing.
Yeah, I bet it is.
Like, whoa, that was a bad day.
Yeah. But I think that's where the reality comes in. If we don't, you know, kind of back to what we don't want and what we do want, if we don't confront the reality, we can't get to a more peaceful, better, whatever word, adjective we want to put on it, reality of being in life. You know, we've kind of got to see this stuff for real in order for us to make the changes that need to happen. So I think it's really powerful. So,
and while we're on this topic, I have one other important thing to mention.
Absolutely.
I think even from my own experience, like, despair can swallow you, like swallow you whole. And it is very easy when you're in that much pain, no matter whatever type of adversity it is that you're going through, you're dealing with a big life change, you dealt with a loss, like divorce, loss of job, you know, whatever the big change is, like, despair can swallow you whole. And when you're in that state of depression, and we're talking about how the only thing is going to heal you is time, it can just feel like an eternity. Mm-hmm. And it's easy for your thoughts to overtake you and make you feel like, oh man, this is not getting better. And when you get to that place, that's where you're kind of in a trouble space where you really need help. But the one thing that is going to give you hope, get you out of that space and move you forward, is doing something to track your progress. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was journaling and I was doing these kind of grief graph illustrations, years later, when I looked forward and I had people being like, well, why aren't you over this yet? And I'm asking myself the same and being like, God, why does this still hurt? When I looked back at those journals, and I would, you know, kind of flip through them and read all the entries and look at the drawings that I had done, I'm like, okay, 3 years on, like, I can really see my progress. I can see how, sure, you know, I'm not, quote unquote, 100% healed, but I can see how I've changed and how I've gotten better. And so establishing some type of practice that can, where you can see yourself moving forward, is important. And I mean that from an emotional realm, but maybe also adding on to that, some type of hobby,
yep.
And I don't care what it is, where you are learning something and you can monitor your progress in that so that you feel like you are growing and moving forward in something that you can track, you know, like whether you learn a language or an art form or whatever, something where you can physically see yourself moving forward.
Yes.
So you have that as a reference and see your progress, and you can almost debunk your own negative mentality when you get into that dark space.
It's exactly what I invite clients to do, is as they're coming through this journey, whether it's coming out because you're gay or lesbian, or you're saying, I'm going to bail ship on my corporate job and you're going to come out to be an entrepreneur, I always encourage them to find something that they can do that shows that they're growing, whether it be take up cycling or be, you know, start pursuing some artistic creative thing, or as you said, learning a language, or saying they want to drop 10 pounds or 20, whatever it is, because there's so much potential negativity that comes with what we're coming out about. People are going to put you down. People are going to tell you you can't be this, whatever. But if you have that thing that's pushing you forward that you go, yeah, but no matter what, I know I just painted my first painting, or I ran my first 3K, or I cycled my first 10 miles. There's that sense of accomplishment. Plus, it uses different parts of the brain and different pieces of the body. So it kind of invigorates you to keep moving forward. And I love that you brought that up, because I don't think that would have come up in our conversation had you not said, and then this. So it's right. Just so fascinating to me, Megan, that, you know, we had, for the listeners, Megan and I had a very brief conversation one evening, shot a couple of emails back and forth. And then here we have taken the last 30 minutes and literally put so many parallels in how you come out of a place of grief in the same way that you come out of the closet to say, this is who I am in my sexual orientation. I love that you shared yourself in the way that you did and the things that you did today, Megan. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for inviting me to share my story. I appreciate that.
And you do some work in this arena with people, too, who are struggling, correct? You're not just a photographer and a PR person. People who, you know, might want to do some work around grief and stuff, you do some work with people as well, right?
Some, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this year is really my year of moving more into public speaking and being able to reach out more to group settings and also just extend my reach with publications and writing and stuff, because really I think this is a place that I want to have an open discussion with people in order to help people just own whatever it is they're going through so that they can feel a little bit more comfortable with it and have more hope that things are going to get better for them.
That's awesome. So if you would like to connect with Megan, we'll have her web information on the show page, but you can reach her at Megan Sneeden, SNEDDEN.com. And that's MEGAN, Megan Sneeden.com.
It's actually Sneeden, but
Sneeden. Okay. I can't ever remember if it's Sneeden or Sneeden.
Sneeden.
Sneeden. Okay. Awesome. So I have one question I always ask each guest at the end of the show. If you could leave some advice for someone who's really struggling with something they're coming out about, or being more authentic, or being really truly themselves, what would be something you'd love to leave the listeners with as we wrap up here today?
Sure. I would say you need support. Mm-hmm. And I know it's got to be hard to really reach for that place where you have to, you know, get real with people, and you have to be authentic, and you have to be owning your story and whatever's going on with your life. And it's scary, but it really the only thing that's going to help you move through whatever it is that you're going through is getting support. So either you find a new community of people that are having open conversations about whatever it is you're going through and you join that, or you pick up a new hobby where you have the chance to make new friends. When your life changes, your circle of friends and support changes as well. So do whatever you need to do in order to start bringing in some new and fresh relationships where you have the opportunity to build something and get the support that you need.
Hey, 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 Closet Dwellers and Coming Out Lounge listeners. I wanted to invite you to check something out. You know, for all the years that I've been a coming out coach, one thing I've learned is sometimes people come to do the work with me and they only need a little bit of help to get over something very particular and very important to them. It could be reconciling their religion and sexuality. Maybe it's learning how to have the difficult conversations where they say, I'm gay. Possibly it could be, oh my God, I'm out of the closet, but now how do I do this same-sex dating and mating sort of thing? Well, what I can tell you is throughout the years, there are common things that show up over and over and over again. And what I've heard most from my clients and listeners of the podcast is, I want a way to work with you just on these particular subjects. Yay, I am so excited because I've taken the action and I've made this possible. So how do you find out about these particular programs? You go to thecomingoutcoach.com, or if you're on the show page right now listening to the podcast or have just listened to the podcast, over to the right-hand side of the podcast description area thing is an icon that says one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button. You'll be taken to a page that describes each of the different 9 sessions I'm offering. They are one-on-one sessions that we can do via phone, Skype, or even FaceTime. They're very action-oriented. We go right to the topic that you want to talk about. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So what more could you ask for? You get me for 90 minutes devoted to you, plus my book. So go check it out. See if there's something that could help you as you step out, step up, and step in to living your powerful truth. Take care. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach. I look forward to working with you.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.